When gender-ished.
Did you watch the video I sent you of Millie Bobby Brown?
Yeah, but I don't really. That's like so weird.
It's so funny.
Because why? She doesn't give any reason why she thinks she's a flat earther.
I assume it's like part of like an Instagram reply shit. Like, yeah. I don't know, series. But it cracks me up because she's like, I'm what do you call it? A flat earther, I think.
And then she starts singing and her song. And then she
like pauses and then just starts singing like a Drake song.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like
the gum that's just like about to fall out of her
mouth. It's like peak Gen Z humor, like
Gen Z.
And look, and I say this in all seriousness, the funniest demographic of human is teenaged girl. Hello, Valerie.
Wow, that
how
is
are you doing
definitely
today?
Going in the podcast.
Or are we recording already? Alrighty. Hello there.
Hey friends.
Welcome to Pop Culture Parsha.
Where we irreverently discuss reverent texts.
Every time I say Pop Culture Parsha, I like raise my eyebrows at Valerie so she says the next part. Because I still don't think I can say the next part. I don't trust myself to. It's
so
too much of a
good
tongue twister.
Communication.
Good, thank you. It's so nice.
Okay, so we have to do our...
Yeah, what moment are you today? Because I already know what I am. You didn't think of it. I sent you a photo of mine, or a video of mine.
Oh, Danny, that's...
My pop culture moment is the video of Millie Bobby Brown, where she goes, I'm what do they call it? I'm a flat earther, I think. And then she just starts singing a Drake song. That's my pop culture moment of the day.
That's a good one.
Thank you. What's yours?
I feel like I always do throwback ones. Should I do like a...
Do whatever you want. It's your podcast, bud.
Okay. I'm layered tank tops from the 90s.
Nice. From the 90s or from like 2006 Disney Channel sidekicks?
Oh, you're right. You know that photo of Ashley Tisdale when she's on the red carpet?
Yes, I do know the exact... And
that horrifying outfit.
With the teeny tiny handbag on the shoulder and like she's throwing it. Yeah.
That's really good. A really good demonstration for our... audio.
It wasn't for the audience, it was for you, it Valerie. No, okay. It was just
for you. All Shoshana did like the the pose that Ashley Tisdale is doing in the photo. If you know what photo, if you know, you know.
IYK. Well, that's like, have you seen on TikTok now people doing like the intuition claps? Where like they close their eyes and they sit with each other and then like they don't say anything or do anything and then they have to clap at the same time to see if their intuition is on.
Whoa.
Like on with each other.
No, I've never seen that. That's crazy.
And so that's what I felt like that was. We like just stopped for a second and then both said IYKYK. Sorry, my phone keeps
buzzing.
Yeah, you
have to put it on Do Not Disturb.
Incredibly popular. It's just one of our friends.
What was I going to say to you? Oh, I realized another very specific, TikTok hole that I am in is people who own farms.
Who own farms?
Yeah, and then they like go around and they like wake up all the farm animals and they do like a video.
I'm shocked that I'm not on that TikTok because I feel like that's my dream TikTok to be on.
Is it your dream in reality?
I don't think I'd be very good at owning a farm. I've had a dream for a very long time of like
having a goat.
No, it's such a specific dream. But what it is like I marry like a Canadian Mountie.
Okay.
And I live in a reclusive like.
Why a Canadian Mountie?
Because I want to live in like the Canadian wilderness and like a secluded like I don't know, like cabin in the middle of nowhere, like on a lake, okay, with like just like a dog in the Canadian wilderness where it's like beautiful, like maybe on a lake.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like.
You want to live in a horror film?
No, I want to like live like ultimate dream, like secluded author, like recluse.
Okay.
You know, who like has a bunch of like, whether it's books or like movie scripts. And like everyone's like, oh, this is like that author. But like no one sees my face because I'm just with my Canadian wife in the woods all day. Isn't that the dream?
Women can be Canadian Mounties too.
Yeah, women can be Canadians, yes.
Okay, I know that they can be Canadians. That's not the question. They can be Mounties.
Female Mounties. Look, having my computer here, yeah. I don't know, something like that uniform, man.
Send me a picture.
Because I feel like it's like, you know how everyone's like, yeah, like uniforms are like good looking, but then there's also like the ideological element of law enforcement isn't great to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I feel like what does, like, and Canadians, correct me if I'm wrong, but like in my
Canadians, correct me if I'm wrong. Am I correcting you, or are you asking for Canadians from people who listen?
Listen. Like, Mounties seem non-threatening. Like, they're mostly just for, not for show, but for, I'm sending Valerie a picture of a Mountie. It just feels like a uniform that I can get behind, you know what I mean? In the least sexual way. Wow. Thank God my mom hasn't figured out how to listen to this yet. I'm just not going to tell her now.
Yeah. You should just stop mentioning the podcast altogether so she never ends up on it. Okay, so this week we're talking about Chaya Sarah.
Chaya Sarah, yes.
You're correcting my pronunciation.
No, I'm just repeating.
Okay. So shall I give the
Parsha rundown?
Parsha summary?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, so.
I'll be here to correct you, though, if you get something wrong.
Great, if I pronounce something wrong or if I leave something important out. Okay, so the Parsha starts out with Sarah dying at 127 years old. Abraham mourns her and then overpays for a burial plot for her. Then Abraham has a whole convo with his servant, possibly Eliezer, maybe a different servant, who he wants to send back to his homeland to get a wife for Yitzhak. And then Eliezer is like, oh, should I just, like, take Yitzhak with me? And Abraham is like, under no circumstances should you bring Yitzhak back to my homeland. So the servant sets out with his camels, and he goes where all the hot ladies hang out, the well.
Nice.
And Rivka comes out, and she offers to give him water and his camels water. And so he knows that she's the one. And also because she's very pretty and a virgin.
But mostly it's the camel water thing.
And then the servant obviously then gives her a nose ring and bracelets, because that's how you mark something as your property.
Well, piercings in general are about marking property, right? Like, Jewish slaves had an earring in one ear.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
I think it's...
I thought that was a gay thing.
Gay slaves had a piercing in their... No, I think...
Gay slaves had the piercing in their left ear, and right. straight slaves had the piercing in their right ear.
No,
Got it.
I think that in this case, it's nothing to... It's not about, like...
ownership.
Look, I know you said it as a joke, but, like, the fact that, like, piercing does appear in regards to slavery and ownership in Jewish tradition, but this is more just about, like... gift giving. Can I say something really funny though?
No.
Oh. Okay. I'm gonna say it anyway. The high school I went to, you were only allowed one piercing in each ear, and you weren't allowed like eyebrow rings, and you weren't allowed nose rings.
Okay.
But a really good friend of mine, like petitioned the school using this parsha, being like, Rivka Imenu had a nose ring in our text, therefore I should be allowed to have a nose ring.
And
I don't think she was allowed to, but she used to say it all the time and like just get in trouble for having a nose ring. But I just think about that every time I read this parsha. I'm like, classic Rachel, like using, like, yeah, literally like the classic my high school, like using Torah to petition teachers of why we should be allowed to do something. Right. Just cracks me up every time.
It would be the same thing if they're like, well, we should get to walk around naked because Adam and Eva walked around naked.
It's so funny. Anyway, okay, so we have nose rings as a gift, other rings. And like
bracelets.
Bracelets.
They call them armbands, but I'm pretty sure they're bracelets.
Cool.
Try to convince me otherwise.
Maybe they'll go into a concert later.
Yeah. And then Laban comes out to meet them, and Rivka and Laban are like, hey, come back with us. And then the servant retells the whole story that we just read, which, like, why? And you know what? The Mefarshim don't say anything about it.
I think it's so funny.
Why? We just read the whole story. All of the things this freaking book leaves out.
I'm pretty sure Chaya Sarah is the longest parsha, or like one of.
Yeah.
Because it's really long.
Yeah, because he repeats the whole story from the beginning. Anyway. We don't have to, I won't be repeating the story for you because I care about you, our listeners. Anyway, so then Rivka goes back with, moral of the story, Rivka goes back with the servant, and Isaac Yitzhak is out walking in the fields when they ride up on their camels, and that's where we get Mincha.
Nice.
And then, I don't know that I can say this, but I'm going to say it. They go to Bone Town in his mother's tent.
Nice.
Am I wrong? No.
I don't think you can say that.
Okay.
Because, like, especially it's like, I think the idea of the mothers, like, I do think it's weird that it's like, how is our community and how am I as a man going to find comfort after my mother's death? And the answer is
by sleeping my wife.
Like, yeah. Like, Freud is like, man, this guy, this is my guy.
Freud notoriously his favorite Parsha was Hayasara.
I wonder if we could figure out what Freud's bar mitzvah Parsha would have been.
By knowing when his birthday was.
By knowing when his birthday was and knowing the Torah cycle.
Okay. Sure, if you want to do that. I will personally not be doing that. That is a step
too far.
But here's
the thing, I
me.
Can't do it like unless we like press pause and you let me like do the math right now. I'm never gonna do it again.
We can revisit.
Cool. I'm just going to make a note. For
yeah, great. Later. Make a note. That's such important content that all of our listeners are on the edge of their seats for.
So one time, one of my friends was like obsessed with Jesse Eisenberg, the actor, who is very Jewish with a name like Jesse Eisenberg and with the Jew fro and everything. So obsessed with him that she like did the research and found out what his bar mitzvah parsha was because she couldn't find it on Wikipedia.
And then did she add it to the Wikipedia?
I don't think she did, but like she had that information just stored in her head because that's something she needed to know. Like from memory, it was Noach.
Great. Mine too.
But I just remember like being like, what? Why are you doing this? And now I'm sitting here like 10 years later being like, I need to know what Sigmund Freud's bar mitzvah parsha was, otherwise I will pass away. Like I need this information to live.
One of my strongest memories from the time of my bat mitzvah, my best friend from high school and I, the reason that we're best friends is because our bat mitzvahs were a week apart. Nice. And so we had like our appointments with our Hebrew tutor were one after the other.
Did
and then our appointments with our Hebrew tutor were one right after the other. And then our appointments with the rabbi were also one right after the other. And my appointment with the rabbi was first because he had a suede couch and I would write messages on the couch. Amazing. Because, you know, it was like one of those ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I didn't finish with the summary of the Parsha. After Rivka and Yitzchak go into his mother's tent and she comforts him, heavy air quotes around comforts, there's a scene change and Abraham gets another wife and has some other kids, which I didn't really know about. And then, but he gives everything to Yitzhak in his will because Yitzhak's obviously the favorite. Mm-hmm. And then Abraham dies. Don't worry, he gives gifts to his other kids, but Yitzhak gets most things. And then Abraham dies at 175 and he gets buried with his main squeeze, Sarah. Don't know what happens to that other new wife. And then Ishmael makes an appearance to help like bury Avraham, and then at the very end we get the news that Ishmael dies at 137. I thought it was nice though that he came back for his father's funeral. I just have to say that finding out that Avraham had another wife was kind of like when I found out that my grandpa has a girlfriend. I'm just like, you were with my grandmother for how long?
Bro, what the heck? Does it bring you any comfort to know that a lot of Mefarshim think that Keturah, his new wife, was Hagar, who was his old wife?
Is it Rashi who says that?
I think it's a lot of people who say that, actually.
If it's Rashi, again, I'll fight him. I'll fight him again.
No, it's hard to imagine that he just completely moves on from Sarah and finds a new wife. I think it's a lot nicer to imagine this, like, reunion story.
I think it's a lot nicer to imagine that there are actually more named women in the Tanakh, rather than just collapsing all of the female characters into four people.
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah. Hold on, I just need to get off my high horse. Okay, so our pairing for this week. So
hi, Sarah. After we've heard that lovely introduction, we have paired that with the, I'm trying to find the year, the 2018 film, Crazy Rich Asians.
As
you would.
You all saw it's coming.
Or they did if they listened to the end of last week's episode. I feel like it's the obvious, I wouldn't call it an obvious choice. Here is the one sentence that appears in the first paragraph of Wikipedia about this movie. This film follows a Chinese-American professor who travels to meet her boyfriend's family and is surprised to discover they are among the richest in Singapore.
How would you feel if you were dating someone and, like, what happens in the movie happened to you?
I don't know if I'd be, like, horrified or, like... I guess I'd feel like, why have you not told me this? You know what I mean?
Which is kind of her reaction.
Well, yeah, because it's like it's a really big part of your upbringing to leave out.
Yeah. I told my girlfriend, I was like, if you want to surprise me by, right. like, if it turns out that you're a billionaire, like, that's okay. If you want to surprise me by, like, the next time we get on a plane and we go and we fly first class, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, look, I don't want to sound shallow, but, like, if it did turn out that my partner was insanely rich, I'd be like, fuck yeah, like, that's... Yeah. Hell yeah. Like, I loved you first for other reasons, but this is great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'd be a bit pissy that, like, I don't know, like, it's a huge part. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. It's like, didn't I earn your trust?
It's not about earning. I think trust does come into it, but it's also like, they dated for a year, right? Like, they've been together for a year in the movie. I'm like, it's been a year. And I feel like every story you've told me about your past or everything about you that I know is now slightly askew.
Right.
Because that is a huge backdrop to a person and to a personality.
Right.
Is the home they come from.
Well, and also that he didn't, like, he just, like, let her find out when they got on the plane.
Right. Not even then, right? Because they get on the plane and he's like, oh, my father's company does business with the airline.
Yeah.
And then she only finds out at her friend's house, who was like, you're going to the wedding of the year.
Yeah.
And your boyfriend, Nick Young, is an heir to an entire empire.
Right.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Asians. This is one of those movies I wish they had said the title of in the movie.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Right. If, like, Picklin.
Yeah, if, like, Awkwafina's character's like, damn, that's a crazy rich Asian. I'd be like, exactly. Yes!
I'm so mad you just said that instead of me. I was getting there, and because I fumbled the pronunciation of Penguin, you beat me
sucks
to it.
Suck. Anyway, I like, look, this movie was a bit divisive when it came out. Like, a lot of people were like, it's boring. I had a conversation after watching this time with my friend's sister, and she was like, I don't like that movie. And I was like, you're objectively racist and wrong. I think it's great. I think it's such a, like, it's a fun movie.
Okay, there's, like, a couple of parts of it that I thought were, like, a little weird. Like, I think that, like, the weird dad, brother, Picklin's sibling,
right, yeah.
and father, like, being weirdly flirty was, like, a strange vibe.
Right.
There was also, like, a couple of weird cuts. Like, this is, like, way later in the movie, but, like, after the bachelorette party, there's, like, all of a sudden they're sitting on a couch together, and, right, like, yeah. there's transition there. There was another thing like that, too, where, like, there were just, like, a couple of things. And, yeah, it's kind of a boring movie of they go home for his best friend's wedding.
That's not boring. Come on. Like, there's a movie called My Best Friend's Wedding. I feel like, the premise is... I feel people want romantic comedy sometimes to be not ostentatious and not over the top. Like, they want Nora Ephron vibes of, like, very, like, of your richness, if you're rich, is low-key and not in your face. Like, in Nancy Meyers' Kitchen.
No, I'm happy with, like, I loved that at the wedding, I loved that. That was, like, the best part of the movie.
No,
was
but
getting
I feel
to
like,
see them, like, where he's, like, the bachelor party is on a cargo ship.
Yeah, it's
like,
great. It's so good.
That part is incredible. No, that's all I wanted to see.
No, but you were, like, but I feel like...
How does the other half live?
I love it. I think it's such a fun movie. I think the one thing I'll say about it, it's a bit long, like, for a rom-com. But it's fun. And, like, I tweeted about it as I was watching it. I'm like, it's romantic. Like, when they're at their friend's wedding and they can only look at each other.
Right. That
and, like,
part
not
is good.
Take their eyes off each other. And then you've got the Elvis playing in the background. And it's gorgeous. It's the peak of romance. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I love rom-coms so much. And this is, like, a good rom-com in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, here's my problem is His best friend Colin is marrying a woman named
Araminta.
Anyway, I could not recognize her anytime she came on the screen. She looked so different.
It's because the first time you see her, she's wearing glasses, and then the second time she's not. It's Superman syndrome of like glasses just completely change your face.
I just like Astrid, I recognized every time.
Oh, I love Astrid. Isn't she lovely?
She is lovely. You know, in the book, it actually is a fake text, like her husband isn't actually cheating on her.
I haven't gone that far. I'm only halfway through the book.
Oh.
Bro.
I didn't know. Why would you be reading the book?
That's why I thought of this movie, because I was reading the book.
You didn't give me that detail. How was I supposed to? Okay, well, sorry. Spoiler alert. I mean, really, I want to read, like, the next one, because they're going to have another movie.
They're making the movies. Okay. Why did we choose Crazy Rich Asians to compare?
Let's just talk about the movie.
Crazy Rich Asians and Parshas Chayesara, I think, have a few things in common. The most obvious thing for me when I first, like when we were trying to find a movie and I thought of it, was like just the decadence of one family. And like you said, like the question at the beginning, like what if your partner was like insanely rich? And I think that happens with Rivka, where it's, she meets an unassuming man at a well who she gives water and is very nice to. And then the next thing he like claps his hands twice and like an entire posse of riches come out of nowhere type thing. And so that's why I thought of it, of like, it's just like you said, like how the other half lives, and to right. go to like a woman in like an unassuming town, she lives with her brother and her father. We don't really know anything about her mother. And a stranger comes out of nowhere and is just like showers you with wealth.
Right. Yeah. I think there's also this piece of like, being both an insider and an outsider, right? Like in the film, Rachel Chu was like, we're both Chinese. Like how different, like how, of course his parents are going to love me. I'm a Chinese economics professor. Little does she know, that's literally his parents, his mother's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
And
like an independent woman.
Right. And this like experience of like coming from the same background, but that background actually being completely different.
I also think another thing that carries through between the Parsha and the movie is like this idea of Avraham's in search of this perfect match for his son. And right. on the flip side, in the movie, you've got a mother who is just like shocked with the woman her son has brought home, and it's nothing that she wants. And you know what I mean? And so this idea of like, what are the traits we want for our children's partners feels like it's very prominent in both. And in Parshat Chayesara, the defining factor is Rivka's kindness at the well.
Right. I think, well, and because there's also this dynamic of like, then the mother admits to, see, this is like the plot line, I think, like probably works in a book, but in a movie is just like the character of the mother is so inconsistent because
why would
like,
she admit to this?
Well, because then she has this whole conversation where she's like, oh, actually Amma didn't like me.
No, but I think that's like so classic of like, I think that works perfectly in the movie because it's all about her projecting
right.
all of her mishugas onto Rachel because she has her own inferiority complex.
And right, which you see play out after the wedding. She, like, or at the wedding when they, like, confront Rachel with the circumstances of Rachel's birth, then, like, the Amma is like, how could you do, like, how could you let him be with her?
Yeah,
you're right.
And I think you see that, like, also with, like, the dumpling scene, right, of, the grandmother's constantly, like, negging on her.
Yeah.
And I think that makes so much sense because it's, she has all of these insecurities about her own upbringing. And she's like, of course I'm not going to pass that on to to my son.
Well, and I think there's like, she feels that like her concern is legitimate of like, you don't come from this world. You don't know how it works. I feel like that's like a pretty common trope amongst like rich and like what, is there another story that has that same idea of like, you'll never fit in here?
I sort of see it in something like Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah, the exact same thing happens in Gilmore Girls. You're right.
Which is why like, I only say it shocked because it's your favorite show and you didn't think of it.
Right, that's exactly what is, like, ringing in my head. It's, like, the scene where, like, yeah, Logan brings Rory home and his parents, like, freak out. Yeah. And they're like, you just aren't one of us. And she's like, I'm a Gilmore. Yeah,
but I think that's also just running in the whole story, right, of Lorelai it also works in the opposite, because Lorelai escapes to this tiny town, right, where ostensibly she shouldn't fit in because she's born
with super rich,
like Silver Spoon. Yeah,
well, yeah, and there's a scene in the second season where Lorelai is graduating from community college, and there's like a whole thing of like Emily comes with like a video, like a guy to videotape, and they're like, oh, some rich woman is out there like bossing people around, and Lorelai's like, yeah, the rich are the worst.
Yes, I don't know, I think I somewhat commiserate with Mrs. Young, or I can at least empathize with her.
Wow, that's a bold statement. Just kidding, I said the same thing like
I get
2 minutes ago.
But I also think it's like this idea you said of a culture shock, right? Something that always stands out to me about this parasha is Rivka being forced, not forced, but like she's taken to a completely new city with no one she knows. The Mefarshim very famously say, or some Mefarshim famously say, that she was 3 years old.
Freaking whether, Rashi again.
Whether you want to take that as like a literal she was a child, I think one of the reasons it says that is because she takes a wet nurse with her from her father's house back to Avraham's house. Or whether it's about, you know, like she was so without sin, she was like a 3-year-old, she was so pure, whatever it is. But just this idea in general, a young woman, and I think about this a lot in terms of the current religious people who get shidduched off with someone from the other side of the world and then have to move to a town where they don't know anyone, and it's very isolating. And it's on top of that, the isolation, you don't know anyone, it's a completely different culture,
right?
Even though you're technically related, you've never met them before, it could be a different language, you don't know. There could be like dialect differences, difference of minhagim and custom. And I that's the same thing, right? Like you've got this American woman who flies back. She doesn't know necessarily like whether to call someone auntie or not. She's slowly picking up the culture, but it's just completely different from her own. And on top of that, you've got the culture shock of class, where she's this like a single mother, like raised her. You assume they don't have much, and then she comes into lavish lifestyles and just the overabundance of wealth.
Right. Right. I also feel like that scene where she like walks in the house and she goes to drink the water that's for dipping her fingers in, I feel like that's in another movie too.
I think you're thinking of Princess Diaries.
I was also, yes, right, where she eats the sorbet and she takes like a big bite of it, and then they're all like, oh, I didn't know it was frozen. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm also thinking about, I mean, what you're saying is resonating for me is like when I've seen Jewish people move to Israel.
Yeah.
Because like you come to Israel and you think it's going to be like this place that you're automatically going to fit in, but it's actually like very hard to break out of English speaking circles. And like if you really want to like be Israeli, it's hard to do that without, unless you come and you like go into the army and you assimilate that way.
The culture shock in general of manners in the two different countries work completely differently. And
totally.
The way banks work, you know what I mean? It's just a completely different.
Oh yeah. Banks are on your mind.
Banks, supermarkets.
Yeah. Although I think there's something freeing in like the aggressive Israeli mentality I can't always do it, but sometimes I can like summon that like chutzpah, and I'm like, nobody's gonna be mad at me because this is this is like the expected way to be.
So that happens to me too. I don't like when I have to do that. I don't like when I'm forced to be confrontational or argumentative. The first time I had bunch like stuff in my arms at the supermarket, and I put it on the conveyor belt and then went away to get something else and come back. I did that, and then I stopped and I was like, I hate myself right now. I hate when people do that. But then you're just forced to do it, and it's like you acclimatize.
Yeah. I have never asked, though, if there's somebody before me who has more stuff than I do. I have never asked I've never to done go that in front either. Of them.
Sometimes people have offered me, and I've taken it, but no one's ever, like, I've never asked.
Right, I'm always like, oh, it's so nice, but yeah. No, my proudest Israeli moment was, like, I went to the bank one time, and it was peak COVID, and so, like, everybody's masked, and we're not all supposed to be in there, but of course everybody's in there, and they're only letting, like, one person at a time into the bank, and we had taken numbers, and this Israeli girl next to me, because I'm like pushing my way to the front because I was like, because I had also made an appointment before I went to the bank. So I was like, my appointment was 15 minutes ago and I'm not gonna like stand here like a fool. And so I like push my way to the front, and this girl, I'm like holding my ticket in my hand, and she's like, oh, actually my number's before you. And I was like, actually I made an appointment. Nice. Do you have an appointment? And she was like, oh no. And I was like, out of my way. And I literally like basically had to fight the security guard to like let me in, like my foot in between the door. No, I didn't actually do that, but I did make it in. But also, I got my money.
My question is going to be, what, like I said, like the idea of acclimatizing to a culture, like what would it be to acclimatize to the mega wealthy? Like at what point do you like, I'm comfortable spending $1 million on a pair of earrings?
I just think I would adjust so easily.
I'm scared I'd be too good at it, but also like, I just think it's like, you can't think in the terms of wealth that people, like, especially like in this movie that they have, like, no. Ingrid drops what, like $2 million on a pair of earrings, which is market, like
1.2, I think.
1.2, whatever it was. Even so, I can't imagine spending $1.2 million on a house, let alone a pair of earrings.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, man, I have no idea. What I would
like,
do.
I genuinely can't fathom a number in my head of like what it would be like, that $1.2 million is like change that I would buy a pair of earrings like on a whim.
I don't know that it's on a whim. She goes to the jewelry store to buy jewelry.
It's on a whim. And it's also, it's not the only purchase she's made that day. She has arms full of designer bags.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you found out that you were dating someone who was a billionaire, what's the first
thing? If I found out I'm dating someone, I'm like, oh my God, when did that happen? Anyway, yes, that's the first thing.
She's single, ladies.
Yeah.
You want to say more about that or no? No, I'm just kidding. Of course you don't want to. I'll cut this out. If you found out that you were dating someone that was a billionaire, what's like the thing that you would want?
A house.
Oh, so that's like the first thing.
Yeah, the second I have someone who can like pay off my mortgage in my name, so I'm like just living rent free.
Okay, that's practical.
Yeah. Why? What's yours? A boat?
No, I want some AirPods. Like really bad. To be fair,
yours is like a much smaller purchase than I'm like, drop me like $2 million on a house, which is like regular pricing in Sydney. In fact, it's on the lower end of a house in Sydney.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind a home. Many homes.
Okay, no. So if we're talking small purchases, the first thing I like sort of drop hints for, new iPhone, maybe new laptop, maybe an Apple Watch.
An Apple Watch.
I've got a list of things on my phone of like, when I have disposable income, I'm going to save up for these things. Because right now it's like paycheck to paycheck as a student. Yeah. And like the three things on my list is like, I desperately need a new laptop. Mm. A new phone would be nice because mine's starting to glitch sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe an Apple Watch because I want to be a fancy bitch.
Sure, I would take a new computer, new phone. Why not? But no, what I feel like that's AirPods. My like dream. Yeah, I don't have wireless headphones, and I feel like a fool. I feel like a goddamn fool every time I pull out my headphones.
Now I feel worse that I do have AirPods, but I sometimes choose my wireless pair, just my wired pair, because I like them. I don't know what it is. I don't have to worry about them dying for battery. Have you seen this new phenomenon of like wired headphones are back in fashion as like a statement piece?
No.
As like a retro piece of technology, it's you wear me. Wired headphones again?
I actually made that a thing.
Do you also remember how Apple's entire like advertising campaign for iPods in the early 2000s was wired headphones, because they had like the silhouettes on the bright background.
Oh, I totally remember with that.
And so like how far we've come that they've just completely shut, like you have to remember your past, you know. I feel like they're just forgetting who they are.
It's like that like phone chains or like phone charms are back in style.
Oh, hey Paige. Phone charms are back in style.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I guess we should really talk about how, like, there are obviously some parallels I feel like you can make between, like, gossip in Asian culture. Yeah. Like, the Asian and Jewish world, I see some parallels.
Well, there's that really, like, I like that scene of this woman sees Nick and Rachel in the restaurant, and she, like, texts someone, and then you just follow the text around the world.
Right.
Back to Nick's mother, back to Nick in the cafe before the woman's left. That's how Jewish gossip functions.
Right.
Genuinely, like 10 times a day, I get messages on my phone that's just like, have you heard? And I'm like, no. And then I literally text someone else to be like, I was told this. Have you?
Wow.
Can you confirm? Like, it's just how it works.
Sure. Yeah. I feel like there's also kind of like the auntie thing feels very much like we don't like expressly have that, but I have like so many friends, mothers or like right, extended yeah. family members who like I feel like I have that relationship with.
Yeah, like all of my family friends in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Well, the parallels I was going to draw like away from that was sort of character parallels.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I saw, and maybe this is me reading a bit too much into things and like drawing on Mepharshim, but this sort of like fracture in communication between Mrs. Young and Nick.
Mm.
And I compared that in my head to like a post-Akedat Yitzchak and Avraham of like, what would their relationship have looked like after your father tried to murder you?
Right.
Also, we don't really see them interact, I think, a lot afterwards either, right? Like,
no.
We don't see Yitzchak come back down the mountain with Avraham in the text. Like, some
no,
it's
not
implied.
At all.
A lot of people say that, no, he went off and did his own thing. Some heretical people say he actually died and went to Gan Eden for a few years.
And then came back?
And then came back somehow. I don't know. I just think it's like, Crazy Rich Asians shows a parent-child dynamic that feels reminiscent of what I would imagine Avraham and Yitzchak's to be, which is that they're very cordial, like, right? Nick goes home, he kisses his mother on his cheek, he hangs out with her, you know what I mean? He's committed to family, but not necessarily to having, like, an intimate relationship.
Totally.
Or, like, a, like, I don't know what it is, like, just a right, relationship well, at all with his mother. It's, he does it because that's what's expected of him, and it's family, and you have to, but it's not like he's invested in it at all.
Right, well, and because, like, we find out that he was supposed to return to Singapore a year earlier, and he didn't. And so I think that maybe his mother is feeling some betrayal of that.
Yeah.
Right, I actually think you're right that in the text, like, Avraham and Yitzhak don't talk anymore. And
I think the only thing we see, really, is Yitzhak. Because Yitzhak's not there when Sarah gets buried. And then sort of Avraham sends Eliezer, well, he sends his servant off by, like, to find Yitzchak a wife, and then we see Yitzchak burying Avraham with Ishmael.
Right, it's, like, fascinating that Eliezer, who may or may not be Eliezer, I'm just, like, not committed to that Eliezer does such a good job in finding Rivka, that Yitzchak is so happy with Rivka that we literally daven every day in the afternoon because he saw her riding up on a camel.
Yeah, legit. He did a real good job.
Maybe Eliezer became like a stand-in father figure.
Maybe he just knew him really well. Like, he grew up with this kid. It's also like, it's about family values, right? So it's like, it's almost Mrs. Youngian of Mrs. Young knows, like Mrs. Young knows the type of girl she wants for her son. Mm. Eliezer knows the type of girl Avraham wants for Yitzchak, and it just works out in the parsha.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, like, a very, something that I really liked, another parallel maybe, is, like, Rachel is, like, beats Mrs. Young at her own game. Like, they play Mahjong in, like, one of those last scenes, and Rachel lets her win, and she lets her know she wins, and she has this great monologue of, like...
Did you know that before you read the IMDb page?
Of what?
That, like, in that Mahjong scene, that, like, the winning tile, I put it together. She could have won.
I put it together also based on the beginning of the movie. Like, she's teaching game theory.
Oh, yeah. Funny.
So,
oh, my God. I didn't make that connection at all.
Yeah. So she's playing Mahjong, and she gives this whole speech of, you know, in 10 years' time, you've got what you want. He's married to the girl you want, but you're going to know when you look at him with his family that that's because of me, who is this, like, nobody immigrant. Like, so, like, F you type thing. So she beats her at her own game and sort of, like, inherits this thing, because then Mrs. Young gives Nick the ring and she gets that ring, like, you know, so she's, like, welcomed into the family in a sense.
Yeah.
And then in the parsha, you've got... Rivka literally coming into Sarah's tent and sort of taking over that mantle in the same way that Rachel takes over the ring and, like, sort of inherits her place in this family dynasty. I thought that was an interesting parallel,
even more so,
like if, the nose ring.
Take it a step deeper if you wanted like another parallel.
Actually, wait.
No, let me do my parallel. The parallel is like that Rashi says, like, what are the things of Sarah's tent that were taken over? And it's that there was a cloud on top and that her Shabbos candles lasted and the challah lasted every week. So you've got the challah that lasts every week, that obviously she's taken over this challah recipe that Sarah had. And in the movie, you've got her making dumplings with Nick's grandmother. So she's like inherited this recipe and is welcomed into the family through carbohydrates in the same way that Rivka is welcomed into the family through carbohydrates.
That's my parallel. That's really nice. You know, Michael Hatton draws the parallel to the Mishkan and Sarah's tent. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because of like the menorah and the Lechem Mishnah and the cloud on top.
And the cloud, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not.
And because the.
Well, Michael Hatton draws it to the Mishkan and I draw it to Crazy Rich Asians. And you just have to decide which is better and more appropriate.
Right. Because also because the Mishkan had like fabric on the outside of it. So it would have kind of looked like a tent.
Nice.
That again, that's a Michael Hattonism. Read his book Passages. It's excellent. wow, I just got a text from my brother. He goes, Shoshana not having seen Nightmare Before Christmas is almost on par with you not knowing how the U.S. government works.
I got an email from someone at Pardes, like a faculty member. The heading was, you need to watch Nightmare Before Christmas. And then the body of text is like, it's crazy that you haven't yet.
Wait, I was going to make a joke about the jewelry.
I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Now it's kind of the moment has passed, but I'm going to make the joke anyway. They don't tell you this, but the nose ring that was given to Rivka was actually Sarah's.
That's gross.
Avraham had made because Avraham's mother wouldn't give Sarah her nose ring.
That's pretty good. I'm just reading through my other parallel notes. I think that Nick Young as a character of like this humble guy who sort of doesn't brag about his dynastic origins in a way. I think like in my head, that's what I want Yitzchak to be, right? Like this humble guy whose father, and that's what Yitzchak sort of is in the text, right? He's the middleman between Abraham, who has all these grand stories about starting like Abrahamic tradition, and then Yaakov, who is the father of the Jewish people because we're literally B'nai Israel.
Right.
And Yitzchak's sort of the sandwich who sort of continues on what his father did, but it didn't quite completely start the nation. And so it's that sort of humility of like, you know, I'm the middleman, like I do what I do and I like continue things, but I'm not sort of like revolutionary in any way. I think that's Nick Young, right? I like that.
Well, I think that there's also, I mean, this is like another like edge of that same idea of like, I think there's also this idea of like they don't want an outsider to inherit the family fortune, right? Like that's why they bring Rivka back. And then there's kind of this like anti-assimilation narrative. And I didn't come up with that. The Mefarshim are also like interested in like why can't he marry a Canaanite woman? Because like, and then they suggest that it's because that Yitzhak can't marry a Canaanite woman because it would mean that then they're like, oh, well, then the land of Canaan is yours because you like married in. Right. And so it's like important, whatever. Don't know how I feel about that. but I think there is some tension in the movie as well about like retaining those traditions and like wanting, again, to like marry an insider.
Yeah.
And then this idea that like Rachel has, even though she's Chinese and she's like a first generation immigrant, that she's assimilated into American culture because she like has a career and like all of those things.
Well, I think they also make the distinction is that like Rachel's mother's from mainland China, right? She's like sort of this peasant class, whatever. But Nick's family is old Chinese money.
Yeah.
Like who's been based in Singapore already for generations.
Did you catch the Gun Eden reference?
Which one?
There is a Gun Eden reference when they're talking about the house.
Mm.
Okay, when Baekeland pulls out her purse and uses as a map to be like, this is Singapore. And then she's like, this is where we are. This is like, this is how old they are. Like there was a snake eating an apple when they built that house there. Nice. Yeah. Okay, also Awkwafina is just the best.
She's so like, funny.
I want a movie that's just about her.
Yo, have you seen her movie?
No.
It's an A24 movie. It's so good. It's like heartbreaking. Like we don't have to get into it. It's like horribly sad, but it's also like a beautiful movie.
The Farewell.
No, I haven't seen it. Okay, I'll have to watch it. Really, I love her so much. And you know, most of her, whatever, if you read the IMDb page, you know that most of her lines were improvised.
Or especially her with like Ken Jeong. Like, I'd hope they were just completely riffing.
Right.
He's so funny.
My favorite line of hers was when they pull up to the house and he's like, do you want to stay for dinner? Okay. Also, Nick does not tell, like, here's what I would be pissed about is I would be like, I didn't bring the right clothes to meet your super rich family.
Like, he and tells her, like, the family get together. It's like, it's a cocktail party. She would have shown up at, like, completely underdressed. It would have been so embarrassing.
It's not just a cocktail party. It's a full dinner party with, like, what, like 60, 70 people there?
In a gorgeous mansion. Like, right. Yeah.
With a flower viewing. But anyway, but when he goes, she's like, yeah, I'll stay for dinner, of course. And then she like pulls out the like outfits and she's like, you have a cocktail dress in your trunk. And she's like, I'm not an animal, Rachel.
It's funny. It's romantic.
There's a makeover scene.
I love it. It's really great. The only thing it's missing is it doesn't have a musical number in it, but that's fine. Technically, it's got the Elvis song, I guess.
And there's also plenty of music. And
there is, but there's no like 90s musical number that you do. Sure. Yeah.
Well, because it's not a 90s movie, but they do have the makeover scene.
When they have Yellow by Coldplay, but it's the like the Chinese version. Yeah. I love it. And like in the when they were releasing this movie and in like the IMDb stuff on top of it, there's like so much around. Like they put a lot into getting that song. I really like that song. Before we run out of battery, and this was all for Nil, Valerie. Wait, you cast first. You cast. You said you're casting first last time. I want to say mine this time.
Wait, no. I always go first with my casting, and you always go second. Fine, I'll go first. I don't care.
Go first, yeah.
Okay, so we're casting Rivka, Yitzchak, and Eliezer slash the servant. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
For Eliezer, Rami Malek.
Interesting.
I just think he'd be like a great...
He was just on SNL this week. I'm mixed feelings about him as a person, but it was a fantastic episode.
Okay.
Continue.
Yitzchak, Dev Patel.
Okay.
Which you heard me say earlier, so that's not a surprise.
Okay.
Lastly, Rivka, Janelle Monáe.
Nice. That's a nice cast.
Don't you think Janelle Monáe and Dev Patel would make a cute couple? I mean, like, I don't...
Yeah. Well, Janelle Monáe and Tessa Thompson.
Gay, but yeah.
Better couple.
Right, okay. For sure, but...
My Eliezer, David Thewlis from... Remus Lupin in the Harry Potter films.
Nice.
I feel like him as Remus Lupin, like that sort of like
grungy,
like humble guy, sort of like unassuming. Cool. My Yitzchak, James Marsden.
Nice.
Imagine stepping off that camel to those baby blue eyes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sure. For sure.
Like just the nice smile, the nice face. I love him. And my Rivka, in terms of like a woman you have to fall immediately in love with and who would have like, I think, good chemistry with James Marsden. Anne Hathaway.
I knew you were going to pick Anne Hathaway. I don't know.
Did you see me type it when we were sitting next to each other during lunch?
I just, well, because she kept coming up. Oh, because she's all over my IMDb because we've like looked up the Princess Diaries.
Oh, that's so
and,
funny.
Like,
no, I, so you had a premonition. No, I just think Anne Hathaway.
I'm psychic.
That's my cast this week. James Marsden, Anne Hathaway, David Thewlis.
Nice. I would watch that movie.
Me too. I'd watch Janelle Monáe and Dev Patel too.
Yeah, for sure.
Damn. Okay. It's been a pleasure. Next week for Parshat Toldot, we are watching...
The Parent Trap.
I think we had to. We'll get into it next week.
But the Lindsay Lohan version.
Oh, 100%. I'm a Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap purist.
Can't wait to talk about Lindsay Lohan.
Okay. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah.
Catch you next time.
Feel free to DM us.
Yeah. DM us. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
At Pop Culture Parsha.
Yeah, on both. DM us, say
Parsha
hi.
Spelled with three A's.
Parasha. Yeah, reach out. I like it when you guys message us.
Yeah, although I reply to all of them. You don't reply to any of
That's
them.
That's not true. I reply to some of them. Also, I think if you go on Anchor, you can like leave us voice messages. Someone try out that feature for me just as like a whim. I want to see how it works. If you have any questions, again, if you have any suggestions of what we should be doing for certain Parshiyots,
absolutely.
Always welcome. We will credit you if we end up using them.
Yeah, if you have pop culture questions.
Yeah. If you have any questions about this week's Parsha.
If you want to let us know who you would cast in these roles.
Yeah, just give us a message, you guys.
We're desperate. We're desperate for connection.
We like you guys. Okay. Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We need new batteries again.
Oh, it still doesn't stop. I've always...